Blog Talk Radio.
Metsville and baseball fans everywhere. My name is Michael LeColin, also known as the Brooklyn Trolley Blogger, and I welcome you back to another episode of the Metsian Podcast. Change is underway in Flushing. Things are starting to churn, so to say. Luis Rojas is out, coaching staff purged. Some will be re-signed, some others not so much. So let's get started. Let me bring in my partners in podcasting crime. I'll start with the president of podcast operations, Sam Maxwell. Hello.
What is going on, Mike? Thank you for hosting tonight, and let's talk Mets.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's hurry up and get everybody involved. Hailing from Connecticut, my fellow Giant fan. I failed to mention Sam's a Jet fan, and he always gets included in the Giants tweets. Poor guy. Anyway, hailing from Connecticut,
our friend
and partner in podcasting crime, Rich Spirago. Hello, my friend.
Hey, Mike. How are you? Looking forward to looking forward to this podcast, but looking forward to the entire off season because there is not a shortage of things to talk about.
Not at all. That said, let's bring on our guest. You can catch on Twitter and YouTube, Met fan extraordinaire, Mr. Hot Take himself, Boricua, the one, the infamous, Al. Un placer hablar contigo. Bienvenido. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. Yo soy Boricua. Para que te lo sepa.
My family's from Guayama, just so you know. Anyway, let's
get
on with the conversation.
My father's from Bayamón.
Ah, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the show. So,
thank you.
We've talked, you know, on a weekly basis about our New York Mets and our fandom and our interest and our passion for them. Theo, tell us your impressions of the season that was and of the conundrum that the Mets find themselves in right now. And after that, you know, we'll delve into specifics. But give us your impressions, please.
Well, going into the season, I've said this many times, the Wilpons being gone was the World Series in itself, year one of the Cohen. So my expectations weren't like so many other Met fans, World Series or it's a bust. I didn't have that. As the season went on, attending games starting in June for myself and seeing that the team was in first place, and I would always troll Met fans, oh, you can still complain, you're still complaining. It turns out they were right at the end of the day with the hitting. You know, when the Lindor injury happened, I knew the season was gonna break because he was the true leader on the field. They had no true leader. And to see it just dwindle away, that really hurt. That hurt.
And Theo, you know, last week they fired Luis Rojas. What are your impressions of the job that he did? I will just say, and his first season last year, compromised by the pandemic, the team finished 8 games under 500. This season, a full schedule, the team finished 8 games under 500. Was it partly his fault, partly the players' fault for underachieving, partly the dysfunction in the front office, or all of the above? What say you?
I blame the players. They all, most of them, underachieved. Besides Pete, I thought Pete held his own. He kept them afloat for a long time this season. Guys underachieved, Conforto, McNeil, Dom Smith, Francisco Lindor. The list goes on and on and on. They underachieved. Now, when it came down to bullpen decisions late, we don't know. Is it the analytical nerds or is it Rojas making a decision? He was in love with what we would call the fourth string guy on a football team. with Jacob Barnes of the world, and then you fell in love with Brad Hand when Brad Hand was here, and it always failed. So as far as the late game decisions, we don't know who it is. He's to blame for that, but overall, it's the players.
And one last question, and this is what's really going to get this conversation moving. Sandy Alderson, what was your impression initially when Steve Cohen brought him back to the Mets? And what is your position presently insofar as he is still part of a decision-making process for the Mets? And, of course, we're going to discuss front office, general manager, and all of that. But Sandy Alderson, in and of by himself, what was your impression upon his return and the fact that he's still here pulling strings?
I think that was the only way Cohen would be able would have been able to buy the team is Sandy was there. Remember, they brought him in for the Wilpons to fix the mess, and now they want to make sure that Steve Cohen didn't start off spending like a drunken sailor and making everything a mess. So I think he had to do it. He had to have him, and it helped with the sale of the team to Cohen. I'm grateful for that. Anything without the Wilpons, it's A+. But now, seeing that he failed with his two hirings, and then he made the snark remark with the lady who had the issue with one of the guys during a press conference, it just seems like it's just bad with him. Everything now with him is just bad. So it was great to have him back in terms of to help Cohen buy the team. But now if you're going to really start fresh, you got a clean house. And I'm done with Sandy.
That's a point well taken. So, Rich, very briefly, because I want to talk some playoff baseball first. Very briefly, Sandy Alderson. We said before the show, time is fleeting. Time is escaping the Mets. They have a lot to do. They have to get this front office in order. They need to get a general manager and a field manager in place. They got qualifying offers, free agencies around the corner. A lot to do in a short time to get it done. Are you copacetic, Rich, with Sandy Alderson, again, presently involved in the decision-making process? And should this entire process, insofar as reforming the front office, should this spill over a month, 2 months, 3 months? Are you copacetic with that, or is that a red flag and an indication that things are going wrong?
Well, that's a good question, Mike, and there's a lot to unpack there. You know, my take on that is when I'm hearing that there may not be a president of baseball operations in place for 6 weeks, possibly 2 months. Well, now what you're looking at is the GM meetings. There will not be a president of baseball operations in place for that, and it's certainly not a GM because it will be a cascading, you know, they'll hire a POBO, then they'll hire a GM. So now you get somebody in place. Let's just say it's mid around Thanksgiving-ish. Then you've got to hire a GM, and then the winter meetings are always the first week of December. So what I'm saying is that even if these folks are in place right around the times of the winter meetings, they're not going to be making significant decisions. They will have gone through an interview process. They will not know the organization. So what we are going to have to accept is that Sandy Alderson will be making the decisions at least until and through Christmas time. And that's when a lot of the key decisions have to be made. I mean, free agents are going to start signing. They're not going to wait for the Mets. So, yeah, Sandy Alderson will be making these decisions. So now, okay, with that in place, that's just a simple fact of time. Question becomes, are we comfortable as Mets fans with that? You know, and I go back to what I've said on this podcast so many times about Sandy Alderson, and that is that, sure, is he a competent executive? Of course he is. There's no question. He's a brilliant man. He's a competent executive. But at the same time, I can't get past the fact that he has been a GM or a position over a GM for pushing 30 years in Major League Baseball. About, you know, just about a little less than 20 with the A's, like maybe around 15, 16 with the A's, and then five with the Padres and roughly 10 with the Mets. And he has one championship, one in 30 years. So I struggle with, and he had very big payroll in Oakland, the highest payroll in baseball in the late 80s. He had a significant payroll in San Diego. And yes, when he came to the Mets, he did have to do things, you know, a little bit austere, with some austerity. Okay, granted. But still, to say that this guy is some wizard who's going to put this great team together, I stop short of believing that. You know, the track record just isn't there. This is a guy who's all about numbers. Well, how about these numbers? Roughly 30 years in role, one championship. So I ask myself, you know, I have my hands like with my palms up, where's this immense confidence we're supposed to have in this guy, you know? So he'll be making the decisions this year, and hopefully, you know, there'll be other people in place to make late decisions and late off-season decisions this year and going forward. That's where I am.
Sam, I know you have a candidate in mind insofar as president, and we'll talk about that shortly. But again, with Sandy Alderson, insofar as the spillage of time, him continuing in this role through the autumn, how do you feel about that?
Well, to continue to tease that real quick, I didn't necessarily say he's definitely my pick. I just thought it was interesting that his name came up. But not bringing his name up yet because we're talking about Sandy Alderson. And there's a lot of things to talk about Sandy Alderson, so many things that were prefaced for me, basically. And Sandy Alderson is quite the amalgamation of the old white man that seems very out of touch. That is just something that just continues to come up and come up and come up. And it just came up with Jim Cott in a perceived racist brought up a debate. And going to what Tio was saying with his response to yet another issue on the sexual front. So it's just, do I think he should be making, I think I'm past caring whether or not he's around because I know he's not going anywhere. And I understand why. I can't not understand why Sandy Alderson is around. However, I also recognize that he was put into a place that he didn't expect to be, and the people he hired to really run the day-to-day, considering that he thought he was just going to oversee the entire team, and they just didn't get it done last offseason, which may be the folly of the beginning of the Steve Cohen era, and why all these different names that we'll talk about coming up, why, and Cohen, of course, knows that this is, and you know, again, Sandy wasn't supposed to be making these decisions. Sandy was supposed to be selling the Mets. And instead, he had to be more in the realm of making these decisions. So I hold that entire truth. Knowing that they have to do a better job to correct the fact that Sandy had to step in this offseason, they have to do a better job. And that's the bottom line. So I'm willing to accept the fact that Sandy's still around, regardless of all those stats you just mentioned, Rich. Sandy still has something to bring to baseball, but he needs to be in the position that he was supposed to be, regardless of the idea that they were selling to these owners. He was supposed to be the president, and then he was supposed to bring in a hobo, as we're all calling it on the social media world now, a president of baseball operations and a general manager. That, it basically goes like this. Povo, GM, M. That's this offseason, and you can't botch it like you did last.
And that's the bottom line. Playoff baseball, gentlemen. Let's see what we can draw from these teams, because ultimately this is about the Mets rebuilding this front office and putting a winner on the field. Right now, presently, the Rays and the Red Sox are playing. You look at the Red Sox, they won a championship a couple years ago. Last year, they came in fifth place. This year, they re-added Alex Cora. They added from Tampa Bay, Chaim Bloom, and look where they are. Tampa Bay, it seems like they can do no wrong. It doesn't matter who's in place. Whoever Stuart Sternberg is talking over coffee with in the mornings, that's the next guy I want in charge of the Mets. Whoever that guy is, who person, female, it doesn't matter. Whoever he's having coffee with in the mornings, that's the person I want. Anyway, we've got the Brewers and Braves. I want your opinions on the Brewers. They constructed their team from the bottom up, and they're presently trailing in their series to the Braves. The Braves reconstructed their team at the trade deadline. Then we got the Giants and the Dodgers. The Giants, again, they built their team through off-season acquisitions. The Dodgers, we know who they are. They've been around a while, been at this for quite some time. We know how they built that team. And then we have the Astros, who everyone still hates. They're back, presumably not cheating. And then there's the White Sox, who stripped it down, rebuilt their ball club, and are managed by Tony La Russa, excuse me, and he's being opposed by Dusty Baker. Take it anywhere you care. Feel, the floor is yours.
Well, if Steve Cohen wants to do Dodgers East Coast, then he's got to go make it happen with the candidates that are out there, Gomes and Burns. If you're going to do it, you might as well do it that way. If not, I don't want to hear Dodgers East Coast come out of his mouth ever again. That's the way I would go. And then as far as where they go for manager, just stay out of the way, Sandy. And I know you were talking about Sandy going to the winter meetings earlier. Maybe they know something we don't know in terms of, because we're not there. There's a strike looming. Free agents might be told by the union not to sign until, you know, everything's taken care of. So I don't know if Sandy going to the winter meetings is a bad thing. And maybe that's why they're going to delay the hiring of the president of baseball operations and GM until then. So remember, that's on the table. I know we're going to discuss that later. But there's a strike looming over baseball, and I'm not even sure we're going to have opening day on time.
Any impressions about the playoffs?
I thought I wouldn't be interested the way the Mets left a bad taste in my mouth, but you can see the way the contrast in styles. The Dodgers, they build a system, but then they also spend big. The Braves, they added key veteran pieces, and we thought, whatever. It's Jock Peterson and Jorge Soler and whoever else they added. They made it. Yeah, the NLE stunk, but guess what? They made it. The Brewers, they get there, but they just don't have enough. They just have enough to get there, but they're not a World Series championship team to me. The Giants, they're what the Mets could have been this year. A ton of veterans, but they had career years as opposed to the Mets who had career lows. The Red Sox, they brought back Alex Cora, which is why I wouldn't have a problem if Carlos Beltran got a shot at it. The Rays, listen, if you want to hire everybody from the Rays, Steve Cohen's got the money. You can bring them aboard. And just make – you want Dodgers East Coast? How about Rays New York City? That'll work for me.
Rich, pick it up. Playoffs.
Well, here's my thought, Mike. I'm going to take a different direction on this. Think about the teams that are in the playoffs and think about what we just talked about. Okay, so we were talking about the need for a president of baseball operations, have to make that hire, have to get it right. Well, let's take that through the playoffs. Let's talk about the Braves. What did the Braves do? People have made a really good point. When the Braves came to Citi Field in late July, they were five games out. If the Mets had kicked their ass in that five-game series, you know, winning four out of five or so, the common thinking is the Braves would have been sellers. Well, that didn't happen. The Braves actually won three out of five and left Citi Field four games out. So what did Anthopoulos do, their GM? He went out and he was aggressive. He got the pieces they needed. Let's talk about the Red Sox. Where were the Red Sox? They were nowhere, right? Like you said, Chaim Bloom, what did he do? He turned that around instantly. He made a great deal, you know, bringing in Hernandez and Alex Verdugo. He brought in the right pieces. The Brewers, another team, David Stearns, you hear his name, the GM of the Brewers. Mets might be interested in him. Well, he built that team from the ground up. So where I'm going with all of this is, and then the Giants, they went out and they acquired the pieces they had to acquire in the offseason, and they became what they are. They found guys like Gausman, who, you know, I wouldn't have put my mortgage on him, but they found him. Guys like that, and these guys are having career years. So the point I want to make isn't so much about what's happening on the field so much. It's about these teams that are in it. I just rattled off four out of eight, where you could clearly say that the GMs of these teams, the people in charge of pulling the strings, did some great work and did it very quickly. Look at Bloom, especially look at Anthopoulos in Atlanta. Look, Stearns did it the other way, where he built it from the ground up. But look at these teams, and it shows you when you have the right people making these personnel decisions, it doesn't necessarily have to be a five-year rebuild. You can do these things if you have the right people in place, which just emphasizes how important this offseason is for the Mets and how particularly important this hire of the Pobo and the GM will be.
Sam, playoff impressions.
I know we're talking about the playoffs. Just based off of what Rich just said, let's just remember, the Mets, as far as I'm concerned, would have been World Series winners every year of their franchise had they not messed it up at some point in the year. And you look at all the way they have 1- and 2-run losses where they leave the tying run on deck or on base, every single year. It's just constant, literally just backbuilding all of these LOB situations. And so Rich is absolutely right. Now, in terms of specifically the playoffs, I have to say, for me, the wild card games were appointment television, and I just haven't been tuning in the way I literally sat right in front of the television for both wild card games. Now, you know, you look at what's going on right now. I have the Boston-Tampa Bay game on the thumbnail next to all of our stuff. And so I am tuning in a potential elimination game, an actual elimination game for Tampa Bay. And what we're talking about when looking at the Braves, you would think with the way the Brewers are built, the Brewers should be able to handle the Braves, but the Braves just keep on coming. And they've been doing it for 40 to 50 years at this point right now. And then you look at the Dodgers and the Giants, it's exactly where you want it to be. 1-1 going into Game 3, first time they've met in the playoffs ever. I mean, this is and the the fact that it was 107 and 106 wins, Giants Dodgers respectively. That's I'm hoping people are paying attention to this, and I'm hoping baseball knows how to not only keep the viewers they have and get us tuning in. And at least I am with this Dodgers. I think I'm going to watch this Giants Dodgers game later. But I'm glad that I'm tuning in to the Rays and the Red Sox, because you can't count the Rays out. And if the Rays can win, they can bring it back. And the Rays are the Rays. So it's 5-0 in the fourth. Still early. What do we got? What do we
Mike
got? Rich,
muted.
You want to go?
I think Mike may be muted.
Oh, sorry about that, guys. I'm so sorry. Cha-ching, another dollar in the jar. Let's take a breath.
Cha-ching.
Catch it for a second. That was an excellent opening round. Let's get a little personal. Let's slow it down a little bit. Theo Al, Uncle Al, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Your Mets fandom, when it started. I do believe you were alive when the Mets last won a World Series. Am I correct?
Yeah, you are correct. I was 8 years old, so I just gave away my age for everybody to know. All right. I lived 86. I wouldn't trade it in for anything. I fell asleep during Game 6 as a kid. Woke up the next morning to my bowl of Captain Crunch with the game on VHS. My mom said to go watch it. They lost. So I went to go watch it, family watching from the other room. I cheered like it was live. And when the ball went through Buckner's legs, I screamed at my mom, "You lied!" You know, and the rest is history. So I've been a Met fan all my life because of my father. I'm a Met fan because of my father, a Knicks fan because of my father. And yes, New York, a Washington football team fan because of my father. My first Met game, somebody fell off the escalator and died. I remember that as a kid. And just a quick story, I was in the elevator with Mookie Wilson's family as a kid, and I told my father, "Dad, I want to paint myself black and be Mookie Wilson." His family laughed. You know, now I'd probably get thrown out the elevator, but that was a Shea Stadium story when I was a kid.
Do us a favor. Give us what we like to call around here as the shameless plug. Tell us what you're doing and where we can find it.
But you can catch me at least once a week. I do my infamous take on Twitter, and I just opened my newly just relaunched my YouTube channel. It's going to take a while to get what I used to get on Periscope, the numbers, but I'm in it for the long haul. My infamous take hosted by me, the infamous T.O.L. And with basketball season, I know it's a Mets podcast. With basketball season coming up and the Mets offseason, I'll be doing Knicks and Mets once a week during the offseason.
Let's stick with shameless plugs. Rich, tell us what you do and where we can find it.
Oh, thanks, Mike. So I currently work, do some writing for Mesmerized Online. I focus on the Mets history pieces. And what I want to do more of is I want to start getting into some of the business of baseball pieces. So you can find me on Mesmerized Online and at Twitter at CT Mets Fan. So thank you.
Got a question for Al?
So, Al, your hot takes, like, so tell us a little bit more about those. So what? Obviously, they're sports-oriented, but maybe you can give us a flavor of, like, what people might expect when they go to look at your hot take. Like, do you do things around the game that was played last night, or are you more focusing on the big picture of the season, or what would they expect?
I try to do what happened during that week or whatever the big story might be. I'm not so into analytics and stats like that. I leave that to the rest of the Twitter experts to do all those things. But I usually, you know, I speak from the heart. I give whatever I feel at that moment, whatever I'm feeling. It may range from a player to going after the fans to what's a big series coming up. Just whatever I'm feeling at that moment, I do. So I just go with the flow.
Sounds good. Thank
Sam,
you.
Sam, give us a – I'm sorry. Sam, give us a shameless plug, and, you know, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mike. Shameless plug, screenwriter, filmmaker, actor, really, but I just haven't acted in a while. I want to make an HBO-style TV series about Brooklyn and the Dodgers and how both were affected by the rapid transition into modern America. And always, like, that's a heavy thing to do, very ambitious. So we're always trying to figure out what angle we're going with it, and hopefully I can come up with something concrete soon as we continue to get some podcasts done. So check out Bedford and Sullivan on podcasting. I'm sure Mike, you and I will be going on there shortly. Tio, what I want to ask is, you say that you remember the first Mets game you ever went to. Somebody fell off the escalator and died. Did you witness it? Is that what you remember?
No. What I remember from that game was somebody also tried to jump over the left field fence, ran on the field, and tried to jump over the left field fence. When I told my father the story, like, Dad, didn't somebody fall off the upper deck? He said, no, somebody fell off the escalator. How the hell do you remember that? This was recently I brought it up to him because, you know, my father was, I hate to bring the show down, but February last year, my father was on a ventilator, intubated in a medically induced coma before there was COVID testing. And then he had to learn to walk again and everything. And when he came out of it and during the summer, we just started talking about growing up and stuff. What I remember, and when I mentioned that story, he said, how the hell do you remember that? I didn't see it happen. Thank God I didn't see that, but I remember somebody trying to jump over the left field fence in the same game.
That's remarkable.
How's he doing now? How's your father doing now?
He's good. He just got the booster last week. He just had his 8th knee surgery. I have no bad knees. My knees are good, thank God. But my father's really, really, he's doing much better. So thank you for asking. Grateful.
That's good news. Rich.
Thank you.
We shall resume the conversation with the front office building. You have an item. Slipped my mind. But
I do.
Why don't you go ahead and bring that up?
Yes, sir. Thanks, Mike. So Anthony DeComo, we all know that he's the Mets beat writer for MLB, and he threw a question out on Twitter, and it was a poll question, and he talked about it tonight on Baseball Night in New York. I want to throw it out to you guys for comment. He was talking about how, like we all have been talking about, how important this hire of the president of baseball operations would be for the Mets. And he said, hey, Mets fans, would you be willing to trade the top prospect, Francisco Alvarez, to the Brewers for the right to hire David Stern, essentially trade him for a front office executive? And he threw it out there, and I'll tell you that on Twitter, and I was following it, the reaction was roughly 87% of the people who responded said they would not trade the top prospect, Francisco Alvarez, to Milwaukee to get David Stearns. But tonight on Baseball Night New York, Decomo defended it. He still thinks it's a good idea. He's talked about how he said, look at Yadier Molina. And he said, Yadier Molina has been on two championship teams in his career. Well, in that same span of time, Theo Epstein, and if hypothetically a trade like that had been made, Theo Epstein has been responsible for three world championships. So what his point was is that if you're a senior executive, you have a bigger impact than one player, and you might actually be more valuable to a team. And he really thinks it's something that isn't crazy. So I wanted to get you guys to comment on that if you could.
Al, we'll start with you.
I'm not big on prospects, and I'm not up to date with the Mets farm system. I know Alvarez is the number one prospect. So doing my research on him, I wouldn't trade the one guy that we've had a hole since Piazza, and that's Catcher. The kid is sensational. He's been sensational all year. So he's the one guy I will hold on to. The rest, unless Mauricio's playing another position, they're all open season. But I wouldn't trade him.
How do you feel about that, Sam?
Oh, man. And that's why you might have heard a yes chime in. And that was me. you cannot. He's the top prospect. If you need to put some package together for David Stearns, you do it. But when it comes to catcher, and exactly what Dio said, yeah, I think that, like, look what we had with James McCann. You can't just win championships with a McCann. You have to win championships with a McCarter. So somebody like Francisco Alvarez, and Mike, I'm going to pass it to you before you ask Rich. Rich is the one who brought it up, but he didn't exactly give his answer. I'm going to ask you first, having seen him in Brooklyn, what would you do? Because I would not.
I'm leaning against like that. If he was, say, a player at a different position, I'd entertain the thought. But the fact that he's a catcher, they're hard to come by, especially catchers, of this caliber of talent. So far, so good. And that's why I'm hesitant to make a move like that. If he was an outfielder, first baseman, second, whatever, even a pitcher, I'd entertain the idea. But the fact that he's a catcher and they're so hard to come by, I will have to, right now, pass up on that opportunity. But you know what? I need a night to sleep on it. And yes, I did see him in Brooklyn up close. A super season, a spectacular season even. Even though, albeit it was Brooklyn's first season of long A, Francisco Alvarez now owns the Cyclone record for home runs in the season. He hit 24 overall, 22 for the Cyclones. And he did that in 279 at-bats. I think that speaks for itself. He slugged over 500, mm-hmm. He's only 19. So that's why I'm hesitant, because he's a catcher. And he's pretty good defensively as well. So if nobody has any other items insofar as that nature, a trade for Alvarez, the newest name in the front office search is the Dodgers assistant general manager, Brandon Gomes. And, of course, he joins the list along with Billy Bean. We mentioned David Stearns. And if you guys have any other, you know, people on your list, by all means, mention them, and I'll go reverse order.
Mike,
Sam,
Mike, I just want to throw out there before we even start the conversation, I just want to throw out there that at no point in any rumors have we been talking about a woman. And I don't know whether, you know, like there's anybody else out there that can name, because apparently any, you know, Kim Ng is the only one I know. And again, that's part of the problem. So if any of you know, we should first start there, because it is yet another lot of white males. And then again, you shouldn't necessarily have that just be the thing we talk about. That shouldn't necessarily be the thing that discounts anybody. However, it should still be discussed.
Well, the fact that we're not discussing, you're right, that is problematic, and I put the onus on Major League Baseball to rectify that. They have to do a better job of recruiting out of colleges and various, you know, aspects of life and getting them incorporated into their organizations and promoting from within. And like I say, padding their resume. And like prospects, you keep some, others, you know, you shop around to the rest of your competition. I will always go back to the 1990s Mets front office. In the same front office at the same time, they had Cashin, they had Joe McLavin, they had Jerry Hunsicker, you know. So my point is that there is a way of grooming talent, and the onus is not just on the Mets, but all of Major League Baseball to rectify that situation. Now, if anyone is aware of any other candidates, by all means, this is the time to speak up. Otherwise, I will turn the floor to you, Al. What say you? Do any of the names previously mentioned inspire any kind of, you know, hope for you?
Well, I know Billy Bean, didn't he just do something with, it came out today, it's SeatGeek, investing, or he's going to be partners with SeatGeek. And he has a part ownership with the A's. So now after seeing that today, and I know that he has part ownership with the A's, I don't know. It'll have to be some mind-blowing thing for him to come to the Mets. So to me, I've turned cold on Bean, even though when I did my infamous take last week of my deal, Steve Cohen letter, I was all in on Bean. But now seeing the things that are coming out, I don't know if it's going to happen. As far as a female candidate for the Mets, why would a female want to come work for the Mets with all the drama that's happened with sexual harassment and things like that? Wouldn't you be hesitant to come work for the Mets? Especially if Sandy's still there?
That's a point well taken. And Rich, before I ask for your opinion, I will also add the onus is also on the media, because they're the ones who like to snoop and, you know, snoop around and discover stories or people, places, and things. Why aren't they searching organizations for potential candidates? Why are they recycling the same names?
Well, those are good points, Mike. And I am not aware of an up-and-coming female executive. I'm sure there are some. I just am not aware of any names. Kim Ng is the name that we all know. She was a candidate to join the Mets front office a while back, and they blew it on her then. And I, you know, you can argue that it was just timing this time around, that if she were still available, I'm sure she would be a top candidate now. And again, I just don't know any names. And you're right. The names we hear are same old thing, right? It's the same group of people just being recycled. What were we just talking about? We were talking about trading a prospect to another organization for their GM. There's or these Dodger folks who are assistants. So really, it's just taking, you know, it's like a chess piece. Take it from one square, put it on another. There's not really new blood. And yes, that's a systemic problem in Major League Baseball. I don't think the Mets single-handedly could fix it. I think it has to start, like you said, Mike, where women, people of different backgrounds, have to start getting opportunities in all levels. And then it just becomes natural. It just becomes a natural progression. Now, in terms of the Mets, well, you know, it looks like that's where they're shopping. They're shopping, you know, for people who are either in these roles with other teams or step away from these roles with other teams. And the best I could say is, to me, the criteria is if these people are affiliated, these candidates, are affiliated with teams that have been successful, they're fine by me. That's what I want. You know, if a team like the Dodgers, absolutely. If they know how to build a winning organization that consistently wins, great. People in the Dodgers organization, they know something, so I'll bring that intellectual capital here. No problem with that. You know, the Brewers, David Stearns or someone else, yes, that's an organization that consistently wins, so I have no problem bringing somebody like that in. That's the best we have. What else can we work with? You know, all we can look at is the track record of these organizations that the Mets are sourcing these candidates from. And if they fit the mold of consistent winners, you know, with a feeder farm system and strategically filling in with free agents and that kind of thing, to me, those are the qualifications. So, and it sounds like they're shopping in the right place. So let's see where it comes out.
Sam, you caught a rumor about one other candidate. What say you?
Listen, I don't know. It's just like MLB News Network. I think I just saw something random about it. So I have not gone down the rabbit hole to find out, you know, the legitimacy of this, actually. But it does sound plausible. And, Mike, you and I were talking earlier that Paul DePodesta has done a good job with the Cleveland Browns after venturing over to football. He did a good job with the Mets farm system, and he's kind of been groomed for a situation like this and has been also unlucky to continue in situations like this, going back to the Dodgers when he traded Paul LaDuca on a moral basis, basically, because he found out he was doing steroids. So it's an interesting name of the white male, since I'm the one who brought it up. It's an interesting name to be thrown about.
All right, let's cross our fingers. We're going to take a caller. Caller from the 914 area code. State your name and your case.
My name is Max, and maybe you guys remember me. I call in occasionally.
How you doing, Max? Welcome back to the show.
Max, yeah. You sound so old, Max.
Well, I am in
You're
college.
You're so big.
Now.
You're so big.
Yeah, no. Last time I called, I was in high school, but now I'm in college. So that's crazy. In regard to what you guys have been talking about, first of all, I completely agree that it's crazy that we're fishing over people who are, who've been successful. I mean, you know, I see so many like good opinions on social media all the time. Like, you know, like strong, like someone tweeted like, oh, name like three things, the first three things you would do as a GM. And all these people had great ideas. Not all of them had great ideas, but a lot of them did. So you don't need an experienced person you don't need like someone who's super experienced to be a good manager. They're well knowledgeable in Mets universe and baseball and know like and can sense like who's a good player and who's worth keeping. You know, you don't need some guy who's been in the, or girl, some person who's been in the business for so long or is actively with another team, because then we have to give up something. Why, we should just give up money. That's why we ask who's coming. But if we, I'm not really aiming to get a particular person. I'm not saying like, you know, a person like, you know, we should target specifically. But we should have a few qualifications. One, they, you know, Steve Cohen and Sandy Alston have to do a major background check on them. You know, we cannot have another situation with another scandal. It's just not worth it. You know, I'm pretty sure Like, when Jared Porter came out, you know, all these people were saying, oh, I knew. Oh, I knew. Oh, yeah, it was so obvious. Yeah, like, oh, he had, you know, like, all these women had come out, and all these people and these executives and assistants, you know, people were like, oh, I knew. It was like, this whole time, I knew. Well, they knew. Why didn't they say anything? Why wasn't there an investigation? Why, you know, before he was hired, it was completely preventable. And, you know, they just said, oh, he's very smart in baseball, and that's very nice. But, you know, they didn't do any research about him. They didn't, you know, talk about what it would be like to work with him, or they didn't do enough, obviously, because they hired him, and then these women came forth. So we need to get someone who has been successful in workplaces, someone who's easy to work with, someone who knows baseball, and someone who, in my opinion, and this is just what I would do with a GM, not change the team dramatically as has been talked about on social media. Everyone's talking about, whether should we sign Chris Bryant for $90 million or $180 million? Like, you know, it's like people are already making up their minds that we're going to sign Chris Bryant and then re-sign Baez. And, you know, like, the truth is Baez does not have a place on the field. He does not, unless we're kicking off McNeil or Dom or JD. We have to kick off some of those people.
Can I say?
Yes. Yes to all. Let's do it.
Wait, so you're saying that there's no place for Baez on this team. Meanwhile, he pretty much had the same impact Cespedes did in the team, except they didn't go to the playoffs. He put up the same numbers, and he's everything this team lacks. He's a pit bull. He plays with intensity. He brings passion. He brings fire, something this organization has lacked for God knows how long. I don't give a rat's ass about Jeff McNeil. I don't give a rat's ass about Dom Smith. I don't give a rat's ass about J.D. Davis, Michael Conforto. Nice guys, whatever the case may be. But guess what? They haven't won a damn thing. This roster needs a major overhaul. I want the guys who play with the passion that Javi Baez does, turning a single into a double. Yeah, he strikes out a lot. But guess what? His approach changed the last month of the season, month and a half of the season. And the guy was money. I'd put him at catcher if he could play catcher, just to have him on the field all day. So for you to say, and no disrespect, that Javi Baez has no place on his team, holy bleep.
Well, you know what, Al? Everyone's entitled to their opinion. That's his. Everyone's going to have one. Baez, not entitled to the qualifying offer. Stroman, not entitled to the qualifying offer. Syndergaard is. Conforto is. Pick one of the four. Take it away, Rich.
Most important guy to bring back on this team is Baez. And yes, I know we need the Mets and every other team need pitching. Yes, I know Syndergaard and Stroman are pitchers. And you can get Syndergaard back in the qualifying offer, which everybody says will happen. Okay, great, lovely. Everything Tio just said. Javi Baez is so unique on this team because of his athleticism. Because of the fact that he wants to be here. He wants to play with Lindor. He has power. He is a defensive – he is an elite defender at all those positions. He could be an elite defender at short, elite defender at second base. He runs. He hits for power. He can bat in the middle of the order. You have to bring this guy back. As far as I'm concerned, you back up the damn Brinks truck, bring this guy back, and yes, I recognize pitching – and they've run short on starting pitching. That's priority number two. To me, priority number one, get Baez back here and then address every last bit of effort after that on pitching.
I'm feeling that, Rich. I'm feeling that intensity. Al, same likewise. I think the Mets are going to have to reconfigure this core. I think the Mets are going to have to reconfigure this core around Baez and Lindor and Alonso. And figure the rest of the position players out. What say you, Sam?
I mean, just in terms of everything we were just discussing, I'm I've been pretty vocal about wanting to bring Javi Baez back. He is not the reason why. He did everything he could after the whole Boogate thing to try to get this team into the playoffs. And it's not like people talk about Cespedes, but like Cespedes did what he did, but look at everything. Kirk Neuenhaus. How did I already forget how to pronounce his name? But anyway, Captain Kirk was a major part of that run. When you think about it, like everybody, that's what happens with championship teams. And that's what, you know, where we're talking about a pennant championship here. That 2015 team will be regarded in many ways like the 1973 team when it's all said and done, except the 2015 team dominated more than the 1973 team until they messed a little bit too much. So I forget exactly where we even started, but my point being, right, Javi Baez, my point being is that everything about Javi Baez, and hopefully, this, you know, I keep saying you have to go in the direction of what you've invested in. And 3 years running, the names we've said, even though, again, I think Dom is the most valuable out of the names that we said are on the fringe. You have to move on from some of these guys.
I'm also inclined to include Nimmo in my core. I want to thank Max for calling in. Thank you very kindly. He brings up some great points insofar as the scandal and the Mets doing their homework and not getting this wrong again. So great points by him. Theo, I'm going to throw it back to you. You made your point on Baez very clear, and it seems like we're all in agreement. But again, we got two players who qualify for the offer and Stroman who doesn't. And this is the question I've been dying to throw across the room. Marcus Stroman, by not signing him, are we repeating the same mistake we made with Zach Wheeler? Deal.
Well, when it comes to Stroman, and it's, man, it's tough because it came out today. He responded to somebody on Twitter who I heard has been going at him, but whatever the case may be, $25 million a year he's looking at. $25 million a year. Now, I was asked, you know, what would I do? I said 3 for $75 million, but I've changed my opinion since I've come on. I don't want to go anything over five, anything over 5 years. And he's not a hard-throwing pitcher. So maybe that helps him, meaning he can finesse last longer than velocity, unless you're Nolan Ryan. But I'm going at five with Stroman, and if not, I'm sorry, but that's a no for me. As far as the qualifying offers go, of course you offered him the qualifying offers. Conforto's not going to take it. Boris is agent, and Syndergaard is going to take it. Do I think Syndergaard's worth 1 year, $20 million? No, he can't stay healthy. He spends more time shirtless than he does in a Met uniform.
Hey, Rich. Rich, what do you think? And I want your opinion insofar as Stroman and Zach Wheeler.
I like the analogy, Mike. I think it's close. I don't think at his best Stroman is as good as Wheeler at his best. But I completely get your analogy. It makes sense. Pitching is not easy to come by. It never was. And especially today, in the game today, we see it. You know, how many teams are having to use these bullpen games? We saw it tonight with the Rays, and it didn't work. You know, in an elimination game because they had nobody. So, you know, good starting pitching is hard to come by. And I absolutely think Stroman should come back. I agree with Theo, though. Stroman turned 30 on May 1st of this year. Giving him more than 5 years, I mean, I like Marcus Stroman. I think he's made for this market. He's from this market. I think his back and forth and his feistiness plays in New York. I think it plays very well here. So I really would love to have him back for all the reasons I said. And I think he's priority number two, as far as I'm concerned, after Javi. But I would not go more than 5 years. I mean, as much as I like the guy, as much as I want the guy back, I don't want him at 36. Yes, I know he doesn't throw hard. That's why I'm willing to take him at 35, you know, 34, 35. I don't want him at 36. I think that would be crazy. Not many pitchers get deals over 5 years anyway, and I would not give him one. Or would I give anybody one, frankly? Yes, Syndergaard, I think it's a very poorly kept secret. The Mets will give him the qualifying offer. He'll take it. Why wouldn't he? He pitched two innings in all 2021. So he'll take – he'd be doing very well for himself, making $20 million with two innings pitched in the last two seasons. It's possible the Mets get a value there, you know. Maybe he cashes in a 14-10 season, something like that, and the Mets get a value. It's also possible that they get Jack, you know, that – remember what happened with Wheeler. He missed two seasons. He came back in 17. He pitched half a season, then they shut him down. So you don't know what you're going to get, but I think that is a no-brainer. They'll give him the qualifying offer. He'll take it. Conforto, like Theo said, they'll make the qualifying offer to get the draft pick. There's no way in hell he's taking it. Boris won't let him take it. I know he said, you know, Boris works for me. I don't work for him. But Boris will tell – and Boris will get him a 3-5-year deal somewhere else. So I think Conforto's as good as gone. And when you start thinking about money and stuff, you know, you could trim – the McNeils, I know that these aren't big dollar contracts, but McNeils and Smith, I'm over those guys. You know, if that's what it's going to take to bring back Stroman and Baez, you know, if they have to look, you know, look in the bargain basement to replace Smith and McNeil and J.D. Davis, I'm fine getting rid of those guys. To me, that's an investment to bring back Javi Baez and Marcus Stroman. To me, those are priorities one and two. And I don't list Syndergaard because I think, like I said, it's a fait accompli with him. Qualifying offer he made, he'll take it. I've already moved past that.
I'm in lockstep. Sam, close this segment out.
I'm going to start with the Syndergaard part because I think that I'm going to be very curious to see how his offseason goes. And not in terms of just that, we know Syndergaard's going to come back. You know, let me not waste another breath on that. However, what kind of pitcher he's going to be and what he's going to be the Mets and how he's going to best manipulate his market as well as his career. If he figures out that he can only throw two pitches, he might as well just be one of the most dominant relievers the world has ever seen. And what we saw in the innings, he struggled in the second game. And I think that it was probably a good thing that he struggled because, you know, you have to get back to – you have to be used to pitching. You have to be used to getting through it. You have to be used to the grind again. He dominated in that first inning. And, that first inning hit with him back, we saw the star power that is Noah Syndergaard. If him and his agent, as well as the Mets, because of his arm, recognize that the star power is going to be best affected in these type of situations, just like it was in Game 5 of 2015. He's been in this situation before. It may be an omen. It may be a positive omen. And maybe that's the direction we need to go with Noah Syndergaard. And that's really... We'll have the whole offseason. I mean, not the whole offseason necessarily, but I'll comment on everything else. I think that's where I want to stop.
Can I say
all
one
right,
thing
gentlemen.
About
absolutely
about Syndergaard? I've been saying for well over a year that he's best meant for the bullpen. Everybody's like, "Well, starter's money." No, he can be a setup guy and then transition to the closer's role, either with the Mets or with another team, and his career can last much longer than if he keeps the starter thing up because it's not working out right now.
I agree with that. I'm okay. I'm a copacetic with him as a reliever if they ever want to make that transition. I'm with you on that one. Let's close this thing out. Let's talk Luis Rojas, the departed Luis Rojas. And Rich, I'll start with you again. Was he a victim, so to say, of analytics or underperformance or front office dysfunction or poor timing considering Carlos Beltran and what transpired and how he got the job in the first place? He's gone. Like I said at the top of the show, in 2020, the Mets finished 8 games under 500. 2021, the Mets finished 8 games under 500. Some might call that a coincidence. What do you call it, Rich?
I think it's circumstances. I think everything you said is true, Mike. I think he was rushed into the role in 2020. You know, who saw that coming with Beltran? Then you have the COVID season, which was just, you know, ridiculously insane. Then you have all the dysfunction in the front office this year, all of that stuff. Package that with, like we talked about earlier, the San Francisco Giants had all those guys who had their career years. The Mets had a bunch of guys who had their career worst years. You put all that together, and by everything holy, Luis Rojas is a victim of circumstance. He is not a bad manager. It's just a bunch of crap that fell on his plate that, you know, it's unfortunate he had to try to waddle through that. Now, also true in my mind is that it is time to turn the page. At some point, like Sandy Alderson said, you know, process matters, but at some point results do matter. The results haven't been good. They aren't his fault. But then again, the results aren't Dom Smith's fault. The results aren't Jeff McNeil's fault. The results aren't J.D. Davis's fault. I'm ready to move on from all of them because it's not working here. Changes need to be made. Sometimes it's not somebody's, it's not a singular person's fault, but that person is in a role where a change needs to be made. And I think that's what it is. You know, it's not that he's a bad manager. It's not that anything wrong. It's just that the sweeping changes are needed. The manager's office is up where when changes are needed on a baseball team, that's typically where they look. And so it just has to happen. It's unfortunate. He's not a bad guy, not a bad manager, but it's part of something that has to happen. And sweeping changes are needed. That's where I am with it.
Tio, gracias por tu tiempo. And I want to add in that bench coach Dave Joust is out. Tony Tarasco from first base is out. Third base coach Gary DeSarcina is out. I thought he was way too over-aggressive and reckless more often than not. So I'm actually happy to see him go. Longtime bullpen coach Ricky Bonas, also gone. Jeremy Hefner perhaps might get redesignated within the organization. But your thoughts on Luis Rojas, how'd it go for him, Theo? And, you know, how do you feel about it?
Well, yeah, I have a story. When Beltran was hired, so at my job, I see a lot of people in the whether they're in movies or in sports or whatever. So Brody Van Wagenen's right-hand man used to come to my property all the time. He said Beltran, they love the Beltran hiring, things like that. Then the whole thing happened with Beltran getting had to be let go. So I was told the Mets were looking, and I've said this numerous times, that they wanted somebody, the front office wanted somebody they can tell what to do, a puppet. The word puppet wasn't used. When I said it, they just nodded their head and shrugged their shoulders. Well, Luis Rojas was that. He was thrust into a bad spot. You know, he was not ready to be the manager, like Vince already said. He got the position based on what happened to Beltran, but he was a puppet. Lineups already made out for most of the managers. But I'm pretty sure almost every move he made was because of analytics, whether it was last year or this year. The only thing I can say was probably his decision was late game decisions because, you know, but I'm pretty sure all that's mapped out as well. So he was in a bad spot. My thing is this, the new manager that comes in, let him manage most of the time. Like, I know you can't do it all the time. But if I'm a manager, especially a respected guy in the business, why would I take any position where I'm going to have some analytical department tell me what to do, and then when things go wrong, I'm going to get blamed for everything?
Muted, hey, yo, Mikey.
Damn, another dollar in the jar. Al, you brought up great points. Great points. So, Sam, wrap this up with Luis Rojas, and then we'll wrap up with a couple of managerial candidates, I guess. So what say you about Luis Rojas?
You know, I think at some point, like, you know, maybe even if it's a mutiny in this day and age, like, Rojas needs to be paying attention. And I know that, like, to bring up the whole Diorme thing and the small sample size with against lefties, you know, I still think that, like, you have to understand what's going on currently and not whatever has been mandated. Like if this is really what's going on, this idea that they're a puppet, like, you have to be paying attention to the moment and just go, you know what, I got to send up my guy right here. And we all know that Almora was not his guy at that point. Now, mind you, maybe Guillorme is not exactly his guy, but when you look at the lefty numbers and you look at how Almora has performed against anybody all year, how can you not make that decision? And so this idea that, like, anybody's a puppet, and you look at that, like, it's just like, it's the matchups. Either they've gotten to these guys so much that they immediately just decide to be puppets. Like, you have to think that if they are puppets, then the puppetry is going to include, in the moment, all the briefings being, Guillorme is performing a little above average against lefties this year. So that's my take. That's where it becomes good managers get through terrible years. They get those players to better. And again, you know, talking about those terrible years that we were talking about, that's part of maybe it's not working 3 years in a row with the quote-unquote chemistry you're talking about. So I think, yes, Rojas was a victim of those circumstances, but at the same time, you have to rise to the occasion. And in those little moments where you miss the fact that Guillorme is hitting 276 against lefties, in the moment that you don't send him up and you send Almora up just because he's the opposite side of the plate, Evan Roberts had every right. Whoever said, like, he was being immature to Rojas is absolutely out of their bonkers. Please. It is a long time coming, and Evan Roberts had the audacity to do it. So that's what I think. I think that at some point something's got to give. And this is where it's got to give.
Well, we know here in New York City, we need somebody who's going to be able to tame the media or at least keep them back at arm's length. A bunch of the names that have been mentioned under consideration, Ron Washington. I will throw out Joey Cora was recently – Joey Cora was recently let go by the Pirates. Clint Hurdle and Joey Cora might be an item once again. John Gibbons, his name is out there. Buck Showalter obviously is out there. Bob Melvin, although he's tethered, you know, that could be problematic unless the Mets pry him and Billy Bean from Oakland. Bruce Bochy is another name mentioned. And, of course, Carlos Beltran, his name has resurfaced. We've stated our case here on this show. I guess we'll review it again. But, Theo, what say you about some of these candidates? And are you in favor of bringing Carlos Beltran and giving him another shot?
If it's Beltran, who it's been reported Steve Cohen was in favor of, I have no problem with it. He just needs to have the right guys on his staff. I can see a Joey Cora being his bench coach for sure, the Boricua connection. I can see that definitely happening now that Pittsburgh let him go and he was their fielding. I think he was their fielding coordinator, whatever you call it. But I can see him being a bench coach with Beltran. For one guy that has not been mentioned, that I've really been mentioning, I've put it out there, I love his intensity. He's won a World Series, and that's Mike Socha. I love what he did in with the A's. With the Angels, I should say, but I've always been a fan of his. So I would like to see him get considered. I know reports came out today, SNY put something out that Buck Showalter would pick up the phone. Duh, if the Mets or Padres call, why wouldn't he pick up the phone? But I'm not in favor of him. He gets you he gets you to the dance, but he doesn't, you know, bring the man or woman back to the room at night to finish the deal. So I'm not in favor of him. Clint Hurdles, I did a podcast and Clint Hurdle was brought up. That's not a bad idea. But right now, when it's all said and done, to me, if they say Carlos Beltran's the guy, and he needs to have the right guys around him that are going to be open and honest with him to let him lead him in the right direction. So he won't, you know, 9 times out of 10 won't fail.
What say you, Sam?
The Beltran one's interesting as the only inexperienced one I may potentially think about, just considering I was very curious as to how he would do. And my cynical self thought that, like, the Wilpons only, like, when it all came out about Houston, that the Wilpons only hired him because they thought that he was going to be third time's the charm after A.J. Hinch and then Alex Cora. And then, we'll hire Carlos Beltran and he'll do the exact same thing for us Wilpons, us, LOL Mets, as they say. But at the same time, there is always that intrigue. I mean, we're watching this Red Sox game right now. Alex Cora took out Rodriguez, and here he is managing. And it says a lot about what baseball thinks about the entire scandal itself in many ways, and that's a whole other podcast, isn't it? But I think that's where, number one, Carlos Beltran was a player at the time. He wasn't even a coach or a manager. So the fact that he was even, like, the fact that the Wilpons ended up firing him is the exact same reactionary way that they managed the team the entire time. So, you know, Beltran did get shafted in the entire thing. Does that necessarily mean that he needs this certain situation? No. However, if we're talking about Steve Cohen, we all think Beltran has the right baseball mind. And the fact that he's even willing to come back, this is what we were talking about back. I mean, we have a Happy Carlos Beltran Day podcast that we could pull from. We were talking about the fact that he was even willing to take the chance again. Says a lot about his character. And then all of a sudden, the carpet was pulled out from all of us. So that's a very intriguing one. And what I'll say about Bud Showalter, and we're watching Dusty Baker in this one, and a lot of it's the, you know, take you to the dance, but I just blanked on the entire rest of it. But at some point, the same could have been said for Bruce Bochy. The same could have been said for Joe Torre. The same could have been said for so many different managers. And so maybe the right opportunity is there for all of these managers who have never won a World Series. And, you know, as we're watching the playoffs and, you know, calling back to what we were talking before, we'll see if Dusty Baker and the Houston Astros can overcome what they perceive right now as adversity and, you know, justification. And that's exactly what's on the Dodgers' shoulder, too, from COVID. But anyway, I digress. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Rich, I'll say it very plainly. I want a guy like Bochy or Showalter in place because I want them reestablishing structure and discipline in the locker room. That's all. What say you?
I agree, Mike. A couple comments on that. I think what we have here, I would love to be a fly in the wall between Alderson and Cohen, because Cohen has said he doesn't want – he's not a big fan. I think it's backwards. He's not a big fan of people learning on his dime, which kind of suggests that Beltran might not be his top choice. I would love Beltran to come back. Love it, love it. And the idea of having Cora or anyone else qualified as his bench coach makes a ton of sense to me. You know, Beltran manager with surrounding him with perhaps former managers or people like Cora who have been around and can certainly help him with some of the more subtleties of the job. I would love that idea. But again, I think about Cohen's statement that he's not big on paying people to learn on his dime. And then going to your next point about a Showalter, a Bochy, you know, driving discipline, what Tio said, my main guy is Mike Socha. If I could have Mike Socha manage my team, I would be over the moon happy. There's a guy, Mike, who does everything that we have talked about for years in this podcast. He believes in hitting the other way. He believes in small ball when necessary. He has them on their toes. He believes in defense, all these things. A veteran catcher like that, knows the game, experienced manager. But the problem, so here's why I was talking about being a fly on the wall. Which way are they going to go? Are they going to go Cohen's way of, look, I want a veteran in there, that kind of a thing? Would it be a Showalter, a Bochy, perhaps a Socha, though I haven't heard his name that much? Or is Alderson going to win out? Because you know darn well what he wants. He wants a puppet. That's what they want. They want someone driven by analytics. Here's the lineup for tonight. Thank you very much. You're not going to have that. Bochy's not going to take that job, nor is Showalter probably. And these guys, they want to be managers. They've been managers. They want to execute their own will on the field. So it's really a philosophical difference. And depending upon which philosophy wins out, then we'll see who the individual is. But in summary, I love the idea of Beltran, and maybe we can appease both schools of thought. If you have Beltran as a rookie manager but surround him with veterans, I would love that. If we go in the direction of having a veteran manager and disciplinarian where Cohen wins out, at least we think that's his position, I'm fine with that too. I'm fine with Bochy. I'd be okay with Showalter, and I would love Socha.
I think Beltran and Joey Cora making a very intriguing duo. Very interesting. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you very kindly for your time, your insights. Unless you have any questions, comments, or rude remarks, we will move on to our final word. Going once, going twice. Tio Al. Gracias por un buen rato. Excuse me. Un placer. Thank you very kindly for your time this evening. Do us a favor. Take another moment out. Tell us what you're doing, where we can find it.
You can find me on Twitter at one infamous TLL. I do, like I said, you can hashtag my infamous take. They're all there. I usually do one once a week. You can find me on my newly relaunched YouTube channel, My Infamous Take, hosted by the infamous DOL. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the time, and hopefully you guys can have me on during the off season or during next season as well again. And as always, let's
go
Mets.
You got an open invitation, the one, the infamous DOL. And like I said, this is part of the show. Your final word. What lasting impression would you like to leave on Metsville?
So I just would love – I know it's tough for this fan base to be positive. And we've been through a lot. But it's time to bury the negative past. The Wilpons are no longer around. I've been preaching this all season. It's year. This was year one under Steve Cohen. We had some good and we had some bad. But we had some fun. We were in first place for a long time this season, but we blew it. We blew it. Injuries happened. DeGrom down, Lindor down. It happened. But it was year one under Steve Cohen. The guy is going to do whatever it takes to win. If this was the Wilpons, I would say, man, start looking for another team. But it's not. It's Steve Cohen. He's going to do whatever it takes to win. He spends $90 million on art to sit on top of his toilet. So he's going to do whatever it takes for this franchise to win a World Series in 3 to 5 years because he does not want egg on his face. So, Met fans, just be positive, and everything's going to be all right.
Thank you again, Phil. Rich, what say you?
I'm going to say anxious. I'm anxious to see some traction on all these things that have to get done. And, you know, the journey of a million miles starts with a single step, as they say. And I think about all the stuff that the Mets have to do this offseason, and no time like the present to get started. I recognize probably nothing will happen while the playoffs and World Series are going on, but, you know, it's been a week and a day now, and I'm getting a little jittery. I want to see what's going to happen. I want to see them start making moves and start making the correct moves. So I'll say my last word is anxious.
Rich, I have to agree with you. You stole the word right out of my mouth. Strange days ahead. Mets got a lot of work to do it in so short time to get it done. They better get this right. Like I say, new ownership, new expectations. So, you know, I'm not going to be as lenient as I was under the previous dysfunctional regime, you know. So take it away, Sam, and bring us home.
I'm going to go optimistic, you know. I like the direction Tio's going, and that's basically it. That's the right frame of mind to be in. Is that it's not just going to be another sabotage. It's not just going to be everything going the same no matter who takes over. We have Steve Cohen here, and the Mets can exercise some juju. You know, they can find their mojo again, going referring back to some good times in Mets history. So optimistic is my final word, Mike.
Bring us home the only way you know how.
Tio Al, thank you, the one, the only, for joining us tonight. Rich, Mike, as always, thanks for the partnership. And thank you, the listeners, for listening tonight. Go like and subscribe everywhere you find us. Let us know if we need to be somewhere. And the only way to finish out is let's go Mets. Take care, everybody.
Let's go Mets. Buenas noches. Gracias.
Thanks, Tio Al.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, guys.